pain has reached epidemic proportions in America. I'm Dr. Paul Christo. This is Aches and Gains.
Dr. Paul Christo is one of America's leading experts on relieving pain. He's board-certified, Harvard-trained, and a pain medicine specialist at Johns Hopkins. U.S. News and World Report ranks him as a top doctor and among the top 1% in the nation for pain management. Becker's Review selected him as one of the 70 best pain management physicians in America. He's listed as a super doctor for the Washington, D.C., Baltimore, Northern Virginia area. Aches and Gains is a weekly talk show covering all aspects of pain and pain relief. The human impact is real. Older adults, children, and even infants struggle to cope with pain. But there's hope. And there are treatments that can ease pain and suffering. The show offers compelling stories about people who've found relief. We share cutting-edge treatments from contributing experts, and we offer ways to help people cope with their pain.
Welcome to the show. Did you know that post-operative pain that lingers is often neglected? In fact, pain continues in half of patients having chest wall surgery called a thoracotomy, amputation, or breast surgery. This contributes to the alarming number of Americans suffering from chronic pain, one out of every three. And across the globe, the World Health Organization estimates that pain threatens to condemn one out of every 10 of us alive today to die a painful death. I mean, those are staggering numbers, and it's pretty frightening. The good news is this. We're realizing that one way to prevent chronic pain is to block its transmission during and after surgery. In fact, one study reports that using epidurals and specific nerve blocks may prevent chronic pain in about 25% of patients. The technical term for epidurals, spinals, and nerve blocks is called regional anesthesia. We can block nerves in the arms and legs, block the spinal cord, and block tiny nerves in the skin, all with local anesthetics. On another show, we heard about a patient's near painless post-operative experience from a catheter placed along the sciatic nerve. And regional anesthesia expert Dr. Mike Boutros highlighted the importance of post-operative pain control in reducing our risks of developing chronic pain. On today's show, Gene Nyer tells us how a catheter placed in his neck not only provided great pain relief after shoulder replacement, but allowed him to do physical therapy sooner for a faster recovery. Dr. Mike Boutros, Director of Acute Pain at Barnes Jewish Hospital, then returns to tell us exactly how and when nerve blocks and catheters should be placed for surgery.
Aches and Gains is supported by Medtronic, Purdue Pharma, Teva Pharmaceuticals, Millennium Laboratories, Atlantis Health Group, Boston Scientific, and DepoMed Incorporated. For live online listening to Aches and Gains, please go to PaulChristoMD.com. To access podcasts of the show, please go to PaulChristoMD.com. If you have any questions or comments for Dr. Christo, please email him at achesandgains@gmail.com.
Gene Nyer had two shoulder replacements for severe osteoarthritis. He had such a positive experience with regional anesthesia the first time that he chose it again for the second surgery. Let's find out why. Gene, welcome to Aches and Gains.
Glad to be here.
You had two shoulder replacements. A first was on the right and the second the left. How come?
I have osteoarthritis. I had bone loss. Uh-huh. My shoulders would grind. As I used them, they would click or drop, losing control. Trying to do delicate operations was difficult because, I wasn't steady.
Sure. So you had a total shoulder replacement on the left. What kind of anesthetic did you have for that surgery?
I had a nerve block and was put to sleep.
Okay. The anesthesiologist then blocked the nerves to your shoulder and arm by doing what we call an interscalene block in the neck under ultrasound guidance. And then they placed a little tube called a catheter around those nerves, which are called the brachial plexus.
Yes.
And Gene, were you afraid?
Just a little bit. The whole situation you're a little afraid of because you don't know what's going to happen.
Right.
You know, you're there laying in bed and they're doing stuff and you just kind of look away and you don't know what they're doing and you're waiting for something to happen and it really didn't happen, you know. The anticipation of not knowing, you know.
The anticipation of not knowing is the worst part about it. Gene, what particularly appealed to you about having this catheter placed before the surgery?
Less pain, making the operation go better, and my recovery to go better.
And did all those actually occur?
Yes.
What did the catheter feel like when it was placed around the nerves, called the brachial plexus, in the arm?
I really, didn't feel anything, didn't notice anything. right afterwards, I went into the operating room, and that was, you know, the last thing I remember till I woke up.
Right. Well, you describe what that catheter is like. How small is it?
You know, it kind of just looked like a needle point.
Yeah.
You know, it was very thin. I don't know how thin, but looked like it was plastic tube that they put in there, and it had a little bitty of a blue tip, so they know that the end is. When they take it out, they show it to you, say, we got it all.
Absolutely. That's exactly right. We remove that blue tip, which demonstrates that the catheter has not been left in the body, which is really important. And by the way, that catheter is just about 3 inches long and half the diameter of a toothpick, so it's pretty tiny. Gene, when you woke up, were the doctors using the catheter for pain control?
Yes. They put a small pump that would pump sloclasec, and it was metered where they could adjust it to help with pain.
Right.
You know, you had a bag around your neck, or when you laid in bed, you could lay it there that stayed with you.
Yeah, it's very convenient, actually. Gene, in addition to the catheter for pain control, did you get anything else?
I got liquid Motrin through the IV, oxycodone pills, and I got antibiotics while the catheter was in.
Okay. How long were you in the hospital?
2 days.
And did they use it for the entire post-operative course?
Yes. They left it in until I was ready to go home.
Right, and 2 days is pretty fast. When we come back from the break, we'll talk to Gene about how quickly he was able to engage in physical therapy due to the catheter. I'm Dr. Paul Christo, and you're listening to Aches and Gains.
Aches and Gains is supported by Medtronic, the global leader in medical technology, alleviating pain, restoring health, and extending life for millions of people around the world. Teva, the leading global pharmaceutical company committed to increasing access to high-quality healthcare by developing, producing, and marketing affordable generic medicines, as well as innovative and specialty pharmaceuticals. Millennium Laboratories, a leader in the science of toxicology and pharmacogenetics, is transforming the way healthcare professionals monitor and manage their patients' medication therapy. Through the use of advanced technology supported by research and education, Millennium helps practitioners personalize care for patients. For more information, please visit www.millenniumlabs.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Gene Nyer, who had a complete shoulder replacement under what we call regional anesthesia, whereby the anesthesiologist placed a small catheter or tube along the length of nerves in his neck to his shoulder that provided great pain relief during and after the surgery. Gene, tell us now, how was your range of motion and how well were you able to engage in physical therapy?
First day was real numb from everything. Second day, I could move it a little bit, grab things with my hand. It was in a sling, but while I was laying in bed, I didn't have to have it in a sling.
Okay.
With assistance, I could raise it above my head.
Wow.
They've got a machine that raises it up for you to keep it mobile.
Wow, you really had a lot of shoulder mobility because the catheter was placed. And Gene, did you go home with the catheter?
No, they removed it before I left. My pain had gone down enough where it wasn't necessary.
Fantastic. Did you sleep well?
Yes, as much as they'd let you.
or were you afraid you'd pull the catheter out?
There's no problems. They just come over and tell you they're going to take it out, and they take it out. You don't even notice it. I mean, it just whoop.
Wow. Yeah, it's very fast. Now, I know you told me at home you used some oxycodone and Tylenol for pain control. And did you have any complications from the interscalene block?
No.
Good to hear. Overall, how much pain relief did this interscalene catheter provide?
I'd say probably 80%.
Good for you. It's been about 20 days since you had your left shoulder replaced. Do you have any residual discomfort?
Just a little bit, and like again from exercising it and stretching it above my head.
Mm-hmm. How long has it been since you had the right shoulder replaced under an interscalene block?
It's been almost 4 months now. I'm almost five. Yeah.
And any residual pain?
None at all. None.
That's wonderful. And finally, if we need surgery, what should all of us know about having blocks like the one you had?
Look at it as a positive. It's something that only can make your surgery better and make it go easier for you and your body.
Yeah.
So you can recover quickly and get back to normal.
And with that, Gene, I want to thank you so much for joining us today on Aches and Gains.
All right. Thank you, doctor.
Up next is Dr. Mike Boutros, Director of Acute Pain at Barnes Jewish Hospital. I'm Dr. Paul Christo, and you're listening to Aches and Gains.
Aches and Gains is supported by Purdue Pharma, making a positive impact on healthcare and on lives. reminding everyone to safeguard medications in their home. Atlantis Health Group. Atlantis is a comprehensive multi-specialty physician group committed to enhancing the quality and process of healthcare delivery across the country. Visit AtlantisHG.com. Boston Scientific, a leader in microelectric implantable technologies used to treat chronic neuropathic pain.
Dr. Mike Boutros is an assistant professor in anesthesiology and pain medicine at Washington University School of Medicine in St. Louis, Missouri. He's the founding director of the acute pain service at Barnes Jewish Hospital, also in St. Louis. Dr. Boutros, welcome back to Aches and Gains.
Thank you very much, Paul.
We're talking about using regional anesthesia to control pain during surgery and afterwards. We use single injection nerve blocks with local anesthetics or place tiny tubes called catheters along nerves for pain control during and especially after surgery. You know, more and more of these nerve blocks and catheters are performed under ultrasound guidance today. Why? I mean, what's the added benefit?
You can see the local anesthetic or that numbing medicine. You can see where it's being deposited around the nerve.
Exactly. I mean, you can visualize the nerves and the blood vessels and then deposit the local anesthetic in the correct place and better avoid puncture of those vessels. There was also a recent study that described a reduced risk of local anesthetic toxicity. As you know, some use nerve stimulators to identify the nerve and then inject local anesthetic to numb it. But more and more of us seem to be using ultrasound guidance because it's more specific and safer. Which technique is more effective? That is, nerve stimulator or ultrasound?
In very experienced hands, having a stimulator technique would be just as good as an ultrasound technique.
So
It all comes down to how you learned and how much experience you have with that technique.
Sure. Now, at the same time, is there any evidence that using ultrasound more effectively blocks nerves than using the stimulator technique?
That's debatable, I'll be honest with you. A lot of people are now being taught ultrasound-guided technique.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think for this new generation of anesthesiologists, using ultrasound technique is going to ensure that you get the best outcome.
That's right. I agree. Let's now look at one of the upper extremity blocks that our last guest, Gene Nyer, just described for his shoulder replacement. And remember, the interscalene block numbs up the brachial plexus, which are the nerves that supply sensation to the shoulder and the arm. Give us the medical perspective.
You know, after having all their IVs placed in the holding area and discussing things with the anesthesiologist and seeing that it's appropriate, they would probably get themselves sort of in a semi-seated position in their bed, and their shoulder would be sterilely cleaned and draped. They may have some relaxing medicine given to them through their IV. And then the biggest thing that they'll feel is a little stick and a burn. That's the numbing medicine, and it'll be around the neck area above the clavicle in between that region of the neck. If you're using an ultrasound, then they may feel some cold gel, of course, before that needle stick.
Right.
And that's usually the worst part. They'll feel afterwards some pressure. That pressure they'll feel for only a few minutes while the needle is getting to the appropriate location. And then after that, they'll start feeling that medication go in. Some people will describe sort of a nice cool sensation, a little bit of pressure as that medication goes in.
Yeah.
The arm that's on the same side as the, you know, being operated on is going to feel very warm. And then, after several minutes, they'll start noticing that control of their hand is actually not as good. We like to ensure that a block is working properly as if we ask, you know, can you raise your arm for me? It's very interesting to see them try to raise their arm and to say, oh, my God, you know, I can't. It's really hard.
Yeah.
And then afterwards, the numbing medicine will start to set in, and so their arms will feel heavy and numb and warm.
That was a great description, Mike. And that process takes generally about 10 minutes or so. But what about if you're threading a catheter?
If you're going to have a catheter involved, it might add another 5 to 10 minutes to the procedure just because they're going to pass that tube through and then they have to tape it down. But it's not a long procedure by any means.
No, exactly. Hey, Dr. Boutros, explain for our listeners how a patient can be awake during the entire surgery and not feel any pain using a regional anesthetic technique like the interscalene block.
If a patient is way too sick to undergo a general anesthesia,
and
we want to avoid having them have a tube in their windpipe and control their breathing because it's a stress on the heart or on the lungs, then using this technique as their sole anesthetic technique is a great way of showing everybody that you can have surgery and be awake for it.
Mm-hmm.
You're continuing to breathe on your own, but you probably won't remember what's going on during that surgery because of the medications I'm giving you through your IV.
Exactly. And also, this is a useful technique for those who are healthy as well. The benefit, then, of using regional anesthesia is that typically, patients can get better pain relief during surgery and postoperatively. They often need less opioid postoperatively for pain control. And are patients more satisfied in your experience?
Yes. And what we find is that people who have these blocks for these types of surgeries get less opioids during the surgery while they're still under, you know, in the OR.
Uh-huh.
If you've gotten a lot of narcotics, then of course it's going to be a longer period of time for you to wake up and you might be more groggy and, you know, all those issues with nausea.
Uh-huh.
And so by reducing the amount of that kind of medication during the case, that can really help you not just in the long run, but also even in the short run.
Great point. What have you found, for example, in this case with interscalene catheters with respect to better shoulder range of motion postoperatively?
We found that they're able to do a lot more in physical therapy because of the nature of their pain control.
Uh-huh.
They're more apt to be able to do the things that physical therapists need them to do because they're not limited by pain.
Exactly. I mean, it makes complete sense. Patients have told me that they are able to sleep better when they use these continuous nerve catheters. What's your experience?
Oh, yes. What this type of technique helps is by allowing that numbing medicine to continuously give pain relief over the course of the night.
Uh-huh.
Patients tend to not necessarily have to rely as much on their patient-controlled analgesia button, and so they tend to have a better night's sleep on the first night after surgery.
The PCA stands for patient-controlled analgesia, which is a pump that delivers an opioid, like morphine or Dilaudid, through the IV for postoperative pain control. Let's now focus on the upper extremity surgeries for which regional anesthesia is most useful. We talked about shoulder replacement, and another would be rotator cuff surgery. What are some others?
Arthroscopy, having any joints replaced, release of compacted nerves, carpal tunnel release, Guillain's canal, which is in the elbow area,
uh-huh.
surgery on a finger, an open reduction internal fixation procedure. So let's say they fractured their arm.
Uh-huh.
Being able to numb that area for them during the case would be really beneficial as well.
Thanks, Mike. That's a helpful list. We have to take a break, so don't go away. We'll be right back to talk to Dr. Boutros about when to use regional anesthesia for surgery of the leg or the lower extremity. I'm Dr. Paul Christo, and you're listening to Aches and Gains.
Aches and Gains is supported by DepoMed Incorporated, a specialty pharmaceutical company focused on developing and commercializing products to treat pain and other central nervous system conditions. To access podcasts of the show, please go to paulchristomd.com. That's paulchristomd.com. Follow us on Twitter at @drpaulchristo and like us on Facebook, Aches and Gains.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Dr. Mike Boutros, regional anesthesia expert from Washington University School of Medicine in St. Louis, Missouri. Mike, talk to us about the type of regional anesthesia blocks that you perform for lower extremity surgery.
For the lower extremity, you know, anyone who's getting a joint replaced, or if they're having arthroscopy of a joint,
right?
If they're having surgery on their foot, for example, if in patients who have severe diabetes or complications from peripheral vascular disease and mm-hmm. are having an amputation,
yeah.
then that would be of benefit as well. One thing to understand is that we don't typically use the same type of techniques that we've been talking about
uh-huh.
for patients who have hip surgery, because hip surgery is pretty high up,
yeah.
and so and they have a different sort of postoperative course. So for hips, we typically would use a spinal procedure, and that way it'd provide very good relief. Patients who have hip replacements don't hurt as much as people who have knee replacements.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they tend to do well with just a single spinal injection that gets them through the surgery, and then the typical sort of postoperative care path would be with a patient-controlled analgesia,
yeah.
and then some pain medicines and some anti-inflammatory medicines as well.
Okay. Mike, is there a rule of thumb that you use when performing these injections for surgical procedures?
When we numb up an area, we numb up the area like at one level above where the surgery is going to occur.
Uh-huh.
So if you're going to have ankle surgery, you want to numb the nerves at the knee. And if you are having knee surgery, you want to numb up the nerves that are closer up to your groin.
Right, and there you go. Now, we've talked about enhanced recovery after surgery programs with respect to using these regional anesthesia blocks. Mike, how are you using them postoperatively when patients go home, and what's the importance of that?
A lot of patients are getting discharged and doing a pretty good amount of physical therapy at home, and they're getting discharged with a lot of passive range devices and things that need to get their joint moving.
Exactly.
And so we found that sending them home with these catheters can help them sort of continue with their physical therapy course.
Yeah.
And at the same time, reduce the amount of need for narcotic medications. So, you know, especially patients who are very sensitive to these medicines, if they get nauseated very easily, then we would definitely ensure that they get home with that kind of a technique.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the technique is really quite useful as a pain reliever and also to reduce the side effects of other pain medicines. If you've just joined us, the catheter is attached to a ball, or a cue ball, as it's called, that contains local anesthetic, and that local anesthetic is delivered slowly over the course of 2 days or so. And Mike, you instruct patients on how to remove the catheter at home, don't you?
What we do is we have a brochure that teaches them how to remove it themselves. Usually the patient's family member can do it on their own.
Uh-huh.
All it really entails is removing a piece of tape, and the catheter comes out very, very smoothly.
Exactly. I mean, it's smooth, it's easy, and it's safe. What do patients tell you, Mike, who had regional anesthesia? I mean, do they say, I wish I had done it before, or the reverse of that, I never want it again?
By far, I have a lot of patients who come to me and say that A, they wished that they had a regional technique offered to them the first time they had surgery.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's almost daily that occurs. When a patient experiences a regional anesthetic, and if they have to come back for, you know, another operation, then the first thing that a lot of us hear is, I need a block. So, you know, we make sure obviously that we provide it. But
yeah.
But like I said, I think the experience for most patients is they've had a very good outcome and they want to have that outcome again and they want it repeated.
Sure. And Mike, have you seen a cultural shift in the way that regional anesthesia is used in academic centers or hospitals throughout the country?
In the last year, there's been a huge, huge culture change at Washington University in terms of different techniques and not just relying on a straightforward general anesthetic.
Okay.
You know, before we started providing epidurals, they would only have two epidurals per month on average. And now we provide routinely anywhere from 100 to 120 epidurals a month.
Wow.
You know, one surgeon said to me, Mike, I was really concerned because I noticed that my patients were staying in the hospital less. And so I was worried that, you know, they were going to be coming back to the hospital after we discharged them because their pain would return. And I'm not seeing that. They're just leaving the hospital earlier.
Huh.
And one surgeon told me, you know, he has privileges at several hospitals and says that he would rather just have all of his cases done at Barnes because Barnes does epidurals for his case.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly a great testament to the cultural shift that's gone on at Washington University and hopefully elsewhere around the country. Dr. Boutros, what does the future hold for regional anesthesia? For example, there's a new long-acting local anesthetic called Exparel, which is long-acting bupivacaine that lasts for up to 72 hours and used for post-surgical pain. What are your thoughts?
We haven't used Exparel here at Washington University, but from a peripheral perspective, we're talking about interscalenes. I think that medication like Exparel could hold some good promise.
And finally, how can regional anesthesia help prevent chronic pain from occurring?
If we can help control acute pain, especially right after surgery, we can make a big dent in chronic pain.
Absolutely. And Dr. Mike Boutros, I want to thank you for joining us today on Aches and Gains.
Thank you very much for having me, Paul.
The views and opinions expressed in this radio program are solely the views of Dr. Paul Christo and do not necessarily express the views of this radio station and Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine, nor an endorsement by any or all of them of any of its content. This show provides medical information, not advice. Please consult your personal physician before engaging in any course of treatment or use of any of the techniques or products discussed on this show. Discussion of particular uses of products on this show have not been approved by any of the manufacturers of such products. To access podcasts of the show, please go to paulchristomd.com. That's paulchristomd.com. Aches and Gains is produced by Tom Blair and Ty Ford. Elsa Langford is the technical consultant and engineer. Dr. Paul Christo is the executive producer. Thanks for listening. This is Aches and Gains with Dr. Paul Christo.